Hello.
Hello.
JJ?
Hey.
Yes. How are you?
I'm doing okay. How are you?
Nice to hear your voice. It's been a long time.
Way too long. Way too long.
Well, thank you for making time today.
Oh, absolutely. How did your vaccine go?
You know, it was really amazing. I think it's mountain style. I had an appointment with a 10-minute window. I was in and out in 20 minutes.
Wow.
They had an incredible team of volunteers who ushered you from the parking through to every stage to get the vaccine, to get your next appointment, and out the door in 20 minutes.
Wow.
By noon, they had done 300. It's not a huge facility. But and they had a piano player in the lobby and were giving out water, and, you know, it was such a lovely atmosphere. It was amazing.
Oh,
that, only in the mountains could that happen, I guess.
I think so. Yeah.
Are you in the mount? Are you in Minneapolis?
I'm in Minnesota. Yeah, we're in Otsego, so I'm in the kind of the country, but about, you know, yeah, an hour away from Minneapolis. So, yeah, I was just past Duluth, just staying at a cabin for a few days before.
That's nice.
Starting stuff. Yeah.
A little cold. So we haven't talked in a very long time. So I feel especially happy to be able to catch you for 45 minutes here. And I thought we'd start from this moment, and there's so much backtracking to do. What are you doing, and where are you teaching, and what does this year hold for you?
I'm in Minnesota, and I have been since last March, since the kind of pandemic went crazy and I left New York. And I've been teaching remotely through mostly at Columbia and at Parsons last spring. And then this fall, I just taught at Columbia and a little bit at the Y, all ceramics and all strange and remote, and did some weird things to connect with students that way. And actually, it was kind of it's been lovely to do it that way. I'm able to teach and kind of go in depth with things that I don't normally go in depth with when I'm teaching. And then the other times I've had my barn studio here. I've kind of taken over the basement during the winter months here. So I've built the kiln and just generally having more time to work and more space to work and being in nature is something that is key to what I do. So, other than that, I've been sort of battling what's going on in our government and getting extremely agitated there, but, you know, hopefully things will change as they seem they are. And starting another, I've been helping my mom with antique business. So I've been kind of becoming an antique dealer for side income, which is my favorite thing because I'm dealing with objects that way.
Well, and you liked working with found objects, so it's probably a little bit of a treasure hunt for you too.
Oh, big time. And, you know, I've been doing it since I was a little kid. I was kind of the runner for my mom, and now I still am, but I'm taking over for myself. So I love going in places and just scanning. I'm a scanner when I do that kind of stuff. So just as I would look at artwork that way.
Right. Well, you know, tell me what it's like to kind of go back home. I mean, you've gone back to the origins of where your art making really took shape.
Yeah, you know, that has been kind of an odd thing. And I think being here, not just sort of randomly in the summer once in a while, but being here a little bit permanently I had to go through some thresholds of understanding where I started from and looking at that history and looking at the community, and then just kind of rehashing that, and then instead of wallowing in that or being kind of in that mode, I kind of used that way of thinking when I was younger and just kind of step upon that. And now it's lovely being here, and there's things that I saw when I was a kid, and I see again, like a tree that has grown 30 feet or some sort of patch in the ground that I remember when I was younger. And that starts to you start to think about change and time and deterioration of objects or degradation of anything that's going on. Like things sort of falling apart. And seeing that over time has been kind of this lovely moment. And then seeing things that are the same, like the same birds come in, the same trumpeter swans come in, you know, the water is still moving past me. So I like that, and it's there's a level of, I don't know, security that I don't get when I'm sort of just being on the move in New York or in another part of the world. So part of it is weird, but part of it is really, really grounding and able to let me do things that I couldn't do being in New York, art-wise. So,
well, I'm interested to know, I mean, when I met you and I visited you in New York, you know, you were always working in these, under these, you know, really highly pressured conditions. I remember how struck I was. And these were conditions that you imposed.
Right.
Whether it was the amount of space or the amount of light, working in the darkness, really confined. I mean, in that one space you had, I felt like I was in a cockpit.
Yep.
Has that changed, or is the pressured environment manifested differently?
You know, parts of it have changed in a way that there's a bit more space in say the studio that's here, the barn studio, or even the basement. But I, you know, it's funny when I come into a space, either it be mine or someplace that I'm just using, I'm constantly changing, turning off the lights that are architecturally there already, and bringing in my own, you know, electricity basically, and building my own lighting systems and stuff, just so there's more focus on stations that I'm working at. So the studio that I work at now is just kind of big and open, but there's like five different stations in there, and it all is sort of contained in the way that you saw when you were in those small studios. So, and
if I remember correctly, you like to segregate these stations too.
Absolutely. So
you want,
you know,
real differential between the different stations.
Yeah, and something that is sort of the same, and I think you saw part of this, Joanne, but the mobile painting studio, it was in the gallery in New York. It was in Miami. It was in another spot in New York. And now it's in the barn, and that has become vertical instead of sort of a bunker. So it's this vertical, almost a sculpture that is happening. Mm-hmm. So it's 20 feet tall now, and I have to climb a ladder to go paint the top paintings. And so there's still these funny restrictions that I do where once I get up there, I don't want to go down to get a different color or something. I have to use what's there. So those sort of restrictions allow my brain to focus what's right in front of me. And there's similar things that I'm doing now. Instead of it being a contained in architecture that was in built by some New York, you know, basement, I'm doing that my own thing where I've been making these stations for building these micro little kilns. So it's just a small little 2x2 little sculpture that goes up, but it's, everything is there to make this little kiln, and the same with this little knife shop that I've been building. So kind of making things basically from scratch, finding either metal in the ground or clay in the ground, and then building all the pieces. But all those little parts are contained within these little sculptures. And that's how I kind of work. I just kind of collect things, and I pile them up, and then they start to become either a sculpture or a space to make things in. And that sort of attitude has not changed. It's always been like that, but they become more of a sort of a obelisk or more of separate pieces that you can walk around, but all that sort of denseness and information is in there.
When you reflected on your youth and your earlier years becoming an artist, did you make any new... Did you become of anything new, or did you become aware of anything new, or anything that you gained clarity about in regards to your methods and your eccentricities?
Yeah, you know, I think part of that I have, and some of that is understanding, looking at how I grew up in a spot that was just it's just kind of in the rural America, but being around, living with these odd objects and antiques and things that my parents and my mom had, like, I remember taking my first sculpture class and just kind of going to the garage and understanding that I grabbed these pieces and I started to make these sculptures from them and not really realizing what I was grabbing. I just formally was like, oh, I like the way that looks. And then now looking back at that, and I remember vaguely doing these rituals around these things that I kind of randomly took from the garage or the basement or whatever, and I was putting energy into those things. And I had totally forgotten those moments. And I did that actually in the lawn when I was younger. And thinking about that and remembering those moments that happened, I don't know, 30 years ago or something, 20 years ago, that way of thinking about physical things in our world and trying to represent, like, where it's from, the history of it, the attitude around it, by putting more magic into the objects. And I would do these funny rituals around them at night, and I still do those things to this day, but didn't ever really make the connection that way until I came back here for more than a month. So I started figuring that out more in May and June of last year, and was just kind of flabbergasted.
Was that liberating to realize that so much of what you inherently gravitate towards is rooted in those early experiences?
Yeah, I think it was really, it makes me kind of tingly and makes my feet, my toes move. I think it's really important to understand that, you know, I came to art early on in very odd ways of through objects and just historically seeing things that are around, that have been around our planet for a long time. But it's fascinating because I still now go into, say, something I'm interested in and, like, go way deep into, like, how it's made, exactly what kind of material it's made from, how they did it 1,000 years ago and how we do it now. All that stuff, I didn't go in depth of it, but it was in my brain when I was making things. And I guess that having that opportunity to do it now has really made me reflect on, you know, how the speed you make something and how fast you make something, how slow you make something, and how important those sort of different methods I did when I was younger, I still do today, even right now. It's very interesting, and it's very almost humbling to know that I've been kind of going on that path for a very long time, but not thinking about it so much until you do have some time to reflect. And that's been outstanding for me.
Well, and, you know, it's hard to get those times when you're working in the city and in the crunch of what a city commands of you.
Yeah.
It's wonderful to hear. I'm excited for you.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and I think about, I mean, I in thinking about speaking with you today, you know, understanding you as an artist takes work.
Mm-hmm.
And it takes commitment, at least from my point of view, to really observe and feel and pay attention. Your work, to me, isn't something I can just pass by in a gallery. You know, it just commands that I really investigate and pay attention because there's no obvious. One has to really understand or come to understand or maybe come to feel comfortable with the objects, the markings, and the relationships that it all conveys. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's something that, you know, sometimes I think about that when I'm making work and the clarity of it coming through to the viewer. And, you know, I talk to my students about this, and I talk to my friends and myself about this, is like the mode of giving the viewer information is always something that I like to think about. And there's moments where lately I've been making a lot of functional ceramics, and it's been lovely, and there's a lot of attitude in a cup or a plate or whatever I'm making, And there's a lot of drawing, and there's a lot of information. But in the end, you can just kind of grab that thing and you know, drink a cup of coffee out of it.
Right.
And then it starts to unveil itself. But the way that most of the work is involved is I hope that you could walk by something and feel the energy or see something that sort of that grabs you and kind of brings you in. You look at that and then you walk away. And what I think about that is that it's a bit, when we look at a piece of art or when I want somebody to look at my art, I want them to I want it to gnaw at them after they leave the gallery or the studio or wherever it may be. I want them to think about it like almost a movie or a good book that you finish, but you can't get a scene or a moment or the whole trajectory out of your head. And that takes more investigation by the viewer, and it's more responsibility on my end. But I think that's a good piece of art that keeps kind of gnawing at the viewer, and that's what I love and want to do to what goes
so
on.
So you keep discovering, you keep understanding, or find new understanding the more time you spend with it.
Yeah.
The viewer.
Yep, and there's, you know, sometimes we make things, and I say it like this. It's like I make it like a hammer. I just wanted to hit the person over the head and they understand it. And then most of the other time there's this involvement to it, almost the way that we deal with like the way we look at a government or we look at something that's very complicated. We get these bits and pieces and we start to put these things together. And that keeps us wanting more from it, and not in a trickery way, but in an investigation way. And that's something that I love to do when I'm looking at artwork, and I want my students to do that. Like, I want us to do that when even we go and look at a tree or a rock on the ground, we investigate it more than just a glance. And
mm-hmm.
and that's something that I call it, like, we're scanning, and we should be scanners as we are humans, as we look at things, and not taking it right away for granted or just taking it at face value. We go into it deeper, and that's how I run my world, and I think a lot of people, especially you, Joanne, you do the same thing. You investigate greatly what goes on in front of you, and I appreciate that, and it's something that I try to strive for as well.
Well, I think it's kind of remarkable, but I think it's unique. You're kind of a rogue as an artist, if I can use that word, or an outlier, I don't know, you know, what kind of word, but you aren't cut from a familiar cloth. At least that's what I discovered. And of course, then I became more intrigued. And then there's the fact that you move in so many different mediums. You know, while you're known as a master ceramist, you know, I know about your film and your drawings and your paintings, and I know there's coding and everything that you create, your sculptures, your zines.
Mm-hmm.
There's just so many layers to your artistry. And, you know, maybe that's a way, I don't know, I'm asking the question, is that another system that you've implemented to help you sort the flow of information, to help you create categories or help in the sorting process, filtering process?
Yeah, I think that filtering is a good word where, you know, there's, as I make work, it's the ideas or the influence or whatever's coming into me, I'm filtering that stuff, just as we filter stuff into our households from the store, or if you're in New York, from the street. You bring the stuff in and you start to deal with it. But the outlets or the different ways these things come out, you know, sometimes it has to be a sculpture that talks about formal qualities and talks about scale. And in other moments, it's a zine that is a written poem or a word that kind of is very direct. And then sometimes I'm doing these drawings because there's so much information in me that I can't get it out fast enough by these other processes, you know, like, drawing is something that, like, if I have an idea, I go and I just kind of work on a piece of paper or work on the side of a piece of ceramics. But I get that information out directly and immediately, where something like writing or making a film or a zine or something like that, there's a long process with that, which I love. So I get interested in different ways of making, and I get interested in different ways that other people make things around the world, whether it be craftsmen or industry. You know, I like to think about how another person makes something.
Well, you're so object-focused. And when you're looking at an object, it comes from somewhere.
Yeah.
Whether it comes from the earth or the hand of a foreigner or, you know, a bone of an animal, whatever it might be, it comes from somewhere. And it has a history. And it connects to something else.
Absolutely. And I think some of those connections are like, that drives me a little bit, but it also, like, I think about the way that I came upon that object or came upon that thing. And it's like, you know, it's a little bit foreign to me. And you say, like, an animal bone, like, you know, you find an animal bone on the ground, and there's a lot of stories that go on in there in your mm-hmm. brain, and they may not be the exact one that happened, but my brain fills in those gaps. So I like to make work that you may happen upon, and you start to fill in the gaps. And some of those gaps may or may not be right, but it's the viewer's gaps, and then my things start to even kind of nudge at that even more. So,
because I have to bring my history to it as well.
Absolutely.
And my environment too. Yeah.
Yep.
My experiences.
And I love that.
Do you remember, just curious, because you are so object-oriented, and can you remember every object and the moment that you set eyes upon it?
A lot of the circumstances, the place,
there that kind of memory that you hold?
Yeah, big time. Yeah, a lot. If we get down to micro rocks and stuff I picked up, I may get a little fuzzy, but with like mm-hmm. certain things, absolutely. And I can remember feelings. I can remember the time of day, or the smell or the environment. Mm-hmm. And not even that moment, you start to think about those moments when you discover an object or find something.
Well, you question, what is it? What is my attraction to this? It's not happenstance. There's something in your life that brings you to that piece.
Absolutely.
That draws you to it. And that's what I'm so interested in.
Yeah. There's a moment, you know, I think about that as there's moments where you can feel it, you start to float. I feel like I'm floating as I'm going through a environment or a situation. Like, I'm there, but my brain and my eyes are scanning what's in front of me, and you almost kind of go out of your body.
Right.
I know that sounds odd, but it's the real deal. And that doesn't happen all the time, and you find things where that doesn't happen, but moments where that really happens, it's
the most profound moments that you've seen.
Absolutely.
You know, I thought a lot about your work and my experiences that I've shared with you in our conversations. And I came to realize that, you know, I'm very interested in collecting journals, and I have a number of journals in the collection. And I realized the reason that I'm interested in journals is I'm interested in getting into the head of the artist.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I want to know what's going on in the mind that's contributing to what comes from the hand. And I realized with you as an artist, I find that in all of your work. I don't need your journal. I just need to look at all of your work because it's there. I mean, somehow I feel that everything you produce is produced in a journalistic kind of mindset.
Yeah, I think a lot of times it does reflect that. And, you know, I keep note cards, and I have a stack of them, and I have a little drawing pad that's with me, my little metal drawing pad that I kind of made, and that is always with me. But the nice thing about the thing that I like, that I'm attracted to or I get excited about when I'm working, is that even if I'm working on a longer piece, say it's taking me a month or whatever, I still am adamant about leaving room to attack it at a certain time of night, and that mark or that drawing or that information stays there, and the speed or the energy of that stays in that work of art. So it may be this slow thing that looks like it was made by a machine, and then there's a moment in where it looked like, you know, a beaver came and started to chew on it. Like those sort of really interjections or sort of information that I put in there, so you feel that it's like honest, that it is honest and it is a journal. So, you know, the ceramic,
it is a moment.
Absolutely. That's a better way to put it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And that's what I mean about journaling. You know, this is like a stream of consciousness.
Yeah.
That's what I'm interested in. And I don't get that from other artists necessarily unless I go directly to their journals.
Sure.
I don't get the full picture. I get pieces. But with you, in the way that you work, it's more accessible to me directly through the work. What's going on in your head, you know?
Yeah, and I want to give what's going on in my head, because a moment I might have started a month ago, my head's in a different space than it was. And it's important that it keeps, you know, keeps that energy in until the work is finished and finalized.
So in this context, I'm curious to know what it's like. You know, you've formed that group, Satan Ceramic, what was it called? Satan something, a collaborative group.
Yeah.
And I'm interested in how your process and how you work as an artist translates in a collaborative mode.
Well, you know, that really wasn't so collaborative. It was more that I had a group of people that are friends of mine, and they didn't really, they started making ceramics and made it very poorly, and I encouraged them to take a class from me, and then I started teaching them at night and just became their sort of mentors. And then a year went by and they wanted to form a collective, and I said, okay, and I did that. So in the end, it was like, I don't like working that way. It was hard for me
to imagine you functioning within that kind of system. That's why I'm asking the question, because
for some
artists, they get a lot out of collaboration. But the way that you work, I imagine collaborative work is very challenging, restrictive perhaps.
It is, and I went to that being like a teacher and student, and that's how it started. And then it switched to something else, and then I'm done with that. I don't do that. But I would say something that does work is that, you know, I built this kiln, and with a friend of mine that I actually have known for 30 years, but I like collaborating with him a little bit. We built it together because he has like a computer brain. Like the person is just dialed down, makes lists, makes charts. Everything is perfect when we're firing the kiln, where I'm very intuitive and he is not. So, you know, it's less about making artwork, but it's about making a machine to put artwork into, and not
an efficiency.
Yeah,
he offers.
He's the efficient one, and I'm the guy that comes and just makes a mess, but does it really well and influences him that way. So that's been a really lovely thing. And I also do work with my brother sometimes, and he and I have the same kind of brain. Mostly that we go and he shoots photographs and I'll do a drawing or something like that. But nothing that's I like my own voice. I don't like other people's heads in there. It doesn't work.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, what are you aspiring to achieve in the coming couple of years? Is there something gnawing at you, or does that just, again, happen spontaneously that you suddenly get this motivation to want to achieve a certain something with ceramics or film or, I don't know, whatever it might be?
I have a lot of long-term ideas that come into my brain and then go onto a piece of paper that, you know, sometimes roll through and I grab onto and I start it. But, you know, I've been making a lot of self-sufficient sculptures. So these kind of things are really interesting in me, where they're small, they're contained, and they're units to make sculpture from, but they're historically looking at the way we used to make you know, cutlery or knives or the way we used to make ceramics. So those things are really interesting to me in building a system around those. And then there's these, I've been doing a few projects where I'm building larger bronze sculptures, and that's something that is fascinating to me because I've built some systems to make the actual parts of these larger sculptures that are really strange and weird in my kind of style. But I have visions of larger sculptures either sitting in my lawn or maybe they go to some museum or space. But they're about going to other parts of the universe. They're sort of scientific or science fiction in a way. And there's parts that sort of build upon each other to make a group of objects that you have to have with you. And then you go onto this larger sculpture that I call a station. So there's these...
Are you casting the bronze yourself?
I've been casting tin, small amounts of tin, but I have, there's a lovely father and son here in Minnesota that are farmers, and then half the time that they pour bronze for artists or for architecture. So I'm some of that, I just have to wait till I can financially get it to where I want, but I'm building wax pieces or sort of found objects and kind of building that up. And then I take even leftovers and I'm starting to weld those things together. But there's a larger things in my brain that I really want to build. And I have the facilities and the human power to do smaller individual sculptures, but I see these massive things in front of me that I'm slowly wanting to work towards.
So some of the smaller work, you're thinking about the big work, but you're thinking of, you're approaching it in increments.
Yeah, you know, something that is really, I've discovered in the last year is that, you know, I work on a lot of different things, but lately I've been working on a group of three or four things, and I just keep pushing the ball kind of slow and methodical and sort of intricate. And I really like that. I normally don't get time to do that, and there's something about not trying to do all this stuff at once, but doing, I still think it's a lot, but three or four sort of ideas or sculptures and pushing them slowly and allowing myself to do that and not sort of beat myself up for moving slow. So, and my slow pace is maybe a regular pace, I don't know, but I like to kind of work on this sculpture for 2 days and then go and work on this kiln for 2 days or do drawings for this gigantic sculpture that I want to make. So my brain kind of weaves in and out of these sort of ideas and objects that I'm working on, but in a much more methodical, slow, precise way. And that's been really exciting for me because normally in New York life, you know, it's just frantic. So that energy is frantic when I'm making
work. Slow is not part of the vocabulary.
No, but now it kind of is, and I miss the franticness will come back, but I love the way of making things this way. At least for the last year, I've been doing that.
Well, it's been perfect for that.
Perfect.
And the last I saw you, you were pushing painting majorly.
Yeah, you know,
large scale coded language, and that coding I'm interested in as well because there's coded language in everything you produce, some of it more overt than others.
Yeah, you know, I, two years ago, I kind of rebuilt the painting studio in the barn here in Minnesota, and I worked on it in the summer, and I worked on this large painting for, I don't know, over a year, and that was a lot of drawing, a lot of sort of code from the animation that I've done throughout my life. And then actually even making a zine with definitions of the code. And some of that code is you look at it and you or anybody else could get a sense of it's a planting pot or a flower or a briefcase, and then you get into other language that's not. But all that comes from repetition and making. And with painting, there's a lovely moment where, you know, you can put something down and then you can just cover it up with a different color paint, where in drawing, that gets to be kind of it gets a little messy. So after I started making these paintings, and then then I looked at my studio, and I didn't like the way the studio was being formed, so I tore it all down, and I rebuilt it with the same amount of stuff. So I stopped painting, and I actually remade the studio this last few months, and that became, you know, a sculpture in itself. And now I'm just about ready to kind of seriously get back in there and paint again.
On canvas or on board?
On board, yeah. I still make my own.
You were painting on metal too, weren't you? On something heavy?
Yeah, the larger. I have two more of these paintings that are six by eight and a half or so feet.
Mm-hmm.
And those are I made them on aluminum panels that I made that are very thin. They're about an inch.
Yeah, I think I remember a large aluminum panel piece.
Yeah, so I've got two more of those I'm working on, and that's a game I push slow, and I like that it's slow.
Mm-hmm.
And I like to be, you know, again, having them on panel or board is because I'm that's where I attack things. So I'm either, you know, sanding it or grinding back into it or making it very thick, but it can take the abuse that I like to give that
mm-hmm.
object or almost the panel itself. And
mm-hmm.
It being on metal is also something that I'm sort of, you know, it's on aluminum, and I'm very concerned about things being archival. So I've done a lot of research and building those panels, so they're here for a long time if
mm-hmm.
I'm going to put that much the attitude and energy into it.
JJ, you bring such integrity to your work, and you seem to work outside of the art scene, outside of the art arena, in your own little world. And so how do you manage entering into the scene of galleries and dealers and collectors and exhibitions? How do you make that transition?
Sometimes that's a tough one for me. You know, I put the work out there, obviously, but the more and more I go forward, you know, kind of the less and less I care about the art world, but I care about the integrity of objects and art itself. But what I've discovered is that I really like to involve the viewers that come into the space. So, you know, the last thing I did in New York was a sculpture show, but in the end I was in a different mode, and this mode is something.
Is that when you did the big, huge? You did that huge ceramic, multi-part ceramic piece that you brought from Europe.
Yeah, no, this was actually after. This was a year ago or so. I did a show in Brooklyn. Yeah, and
huh?
You know, I did a few projects that are called Sorcery Scanner, and that's a mode of working that I do that involves surveillance and scanning objects and scanning our world, and trying to get people to pay attention a little bit more and get off their devices and get off their cameras and look at things with their eyes. So I say that because that's a longer project that I've been doing, and it involves the viewer even more. So about a year ago, I did a project in Brooklyn that I had objects up, but I also built there was a miniature little corner in the space that I built a spot for Sorcery Scanner to serve chocolate cake out of. And it was in a chimney. And so the space was about a foot and a half by 2.5 feet by 20 feet tall. And I walled it off and I made it accessible to only me. And I put an oven in there. And I love making this cake that I make from scratch. And I serve that during the opening, and I serve that at the end of the show. And people, the show was called Frosting or No Frosting, so they had to either ask for frosting or no frosting on their cake, and I would serve that out of a small hole. But I like that attitude of involving other people that come to see the work and sometimes listening to what they're saying behind the wall to see how they view the work.
Mm-hmm.
And also giving them something as they come in or as they leave. They get to eat something or they get to take a zine, or involving the people that come to look at what we do as artists and that I do as an artist we look at these things, and then there's one more step where they either see me or they see a character that could be me, and they're involved even further. So
they process that object internally somehow.
Yes. And it's also a way for me to, like, I love the idea of galleries and museums and that process, but I also like to mess with it a little bit because it's a little bit sterile and it's a little bit, you know, monetary. And I'm not interested.
Well,
in
you
that.
Want it. I mean, you like to shock a little bit too. You know, the refinement is something you seem to dismiss or want to mess with.
Yes, absolutely. So if
to break down that wall or that veneer, maybe
it's important to do that. And I think that, you know, sometimes work doesn't need that, and that's fine. But sometimes it does, and it's sometimes you've really got to just push the boundaries more than we normally do as an artist.
Yeah.
And that might come back into reality. It's less dealing with the art world and more dealing with surveillance or the government, but I'm pushing that on the humans that come into the gallery.
Mm-hmm. We're running out of time because I'm trying to limit these to about 45 minutes. So
sure.
More balanced. But I did want to ask you, because I know that you have a very have had a longstanding relationship in Snowmass at the Anderson Ranch, and have served there in various capacities. You know, it's a residency for artists, and it seems that it's a very special place for you, and a place where you, my impression is that you feel very much at home and understood and respected. Can you talk to that?
You know, I think it started when I was a young person, you know, going there and one, just doing a workshop. I did that a couple of summers. And I even send students there now from Columbia or another institution. And I think that really just opened my brain completely to other ways of making, other influences. And that stuck with me. I was 20 when I did that. And, you know, I have dear friends in Aspen that I go and see there. They're affiliated with that program. And then, you know, over the past years, I've been going there and making a print or doing some ceramics or just going and visiting the residents that are there or doing a studio visit. And those, it's a place that, you know, it's almost a hub for artists and craftspeople to go there, make work, leave. But it's this community that sort of spirals out from there. And, you know, I see people in New York. I see people in Minnesota. Even on the West Coast, and that the moment is sort of compacted when you go there. If you go there for a day or 2 weeks or a whole summer, like, it's a different world. Your head is in that world, and it's such a lovely privilege and moment to be able to do that and sort of push away what's going on around you and focus on the things that you want to focus on and learn from either the people being there or the visiting artist or the people that I've known for years and seeing how their work progresses. I get onto that campus and I feel like somebody's given me a shot of adrenaline. I just get giddy and excited.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, listening to you talk about it, if I may, visualizing in my head what I know, what I've seen at Anderson Ranch and the way it's decompartmentalized and the way you move from one room to the next, takes me back to our earlier conversation about these divisions within your studios, that you're creating something very similar within your own working space.
It is. It was almost, when I went there, I came
I mean, I never thought about that before until this minute, but...
You know, it's really true. Yeah, they're standalone stations for me. Mm-hmm. You know, I can... When I was younger, when I was a resident there, I came in ceramics, and I immediately walked downstairs and started to make sculpture, and then I moved over and started making painting. They weren't so happy that I came in ceramics and started doing all these other things, but, you know, it all came together in the end. But having that ability to walk around, it was, you know, good schools are like that too, where you can go from a painting room to the table saw or something.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that fluidity, and that's something that I strive in my own studio. And I think you're right. I think a lot of it did come from there, realizing like, well, shit, it doesn't just have to be ceramic. I can run downstairs and weld something.
Well, it's just, I mean, the print studio is right in one direction. You know, the photography studio is down another set of stairs, and, you know, ceramics is down below. It's just everything is right at your fingertips. You just pop in another room.
Absolutely.
And all the tools are there, and if you need some advice, you've got somebody there to talk to.
And the people that advise you there when you're a rookie in the print shop or something, mm-hmm. they're wonderful. At least
yeah.
the people I've worked with there, and mm-hmm. that's a great thing for me.
Well, I think we should end here. I think it's an interesting moment to consider. I'm happy to hear you sounding so energized, so well, so enthused, and so deeply engaged in your work. Clearly, having now this space away from the city has had an impact, and reflecting on your early years as your artistry was beginning to develop has kind of solidified things for you, it seems, and I'm really pleased about that.
It has, and I may be as energized as I am because you somehow give energy out. You know that. You're that kind of person. So I thank you for that.
Well, I missed you, but have really wanted to reach out to you for quite some time. This seemed like the perfect moment. And, you know, I'm based in Colorado now. The collection's still in New York and functioning out of New York, but I radiate out of the Colorado region. So if you get out to Aspen, please don't hesitate to give me a sign. Let me know you're there.
Well, it'll be soon. So I'll give you a sign soon.
Okay.
Absolutely.
And I hope this is a great year for you, and keep it up. And I look forward to seeing what you're messing around with.
Absolutely, Joanna. Okay. It's so great to talk to you. And
great to talk to you, too.
You take care.
You too. Bye.
Bye.